The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
For today's interview, we're speaking with Jen St. Denis. She's a reporter on the Downtown East Side at thetie.ca. Well, welcome back to The Pulse, Jen. Great to have you again.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and it's our listeners really appreciate you bringing some of the work and stories you're doing in the Downtown East Side, kind of in parallel to us. So thank you.
Well, thank you to the community for bringing me their stories that they'd like to see told. That's a really important part of my beat, is that it's folk, you know, stories coming from the community, not just stories being told about the community.
Totally. And we couldn't be anywhere without people being willing to talk and share their stories and share some of the more difficult moments in their lives and their ideas with us as well.
Yeah, too true.
So a couple of weeks ago, we had Wendy Peterson on, who, of course, is with the Downtown East Side SRO Collaborative, talking about this pretty shocking decision by the city to buy potentially over 100 SRO buildings in the city over the next few years. And lo and behold, they have purchased two of the most notorious ones now, only a few weeks later. Tell me what's going on with those Sahota SROs.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Regent and the Balmoral. So they, I'm sure everyone who lives in the Downtown East Side or even next door to the Downtown East Side knows these buildings so well. They stand right at Main and Hastings across from each other. They're these old, you know, over 100 years old SRO hotels.
And these were the iconic bars as well for many decades.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. A lot of the SROs still have bars in the bottom. And the Regent and Balmoral were the same. And for a long time, they were known as the worst SROs in the city because they were owned by the Sahota family. And the Sahotas were just really notorious for not doing repairs, for letting people live without heat and hot water for months. You know, everything you can think of, constant infestations of pests like bed bugs and
there was like bathtubs. I heard about bowing down the floors. You could see like the bend and the leaks from these tubs, like, and blood on the walls. It was bad.
Well, this went on for years and years and years, for like decades. It went on that it was the city would chase the Sahotas down. They would maybe send them to court, but then they would kind of like say, okay, well, now we're using the carrot approach with the Sahotas, because they were always really worried that these buildings would be closed down and then people would be homeless, because I think together these buildings have like 320 units. So it's like a huge amount of housing in the Downtown East Side.
And they're rented out at shelter welfare rate. So $375 a month.
Well, no, I'm
not necessarily.
Some of them were, but I mean, some of them were really exorbitant. Like if you had two people living in a room, like a couple sharing a room, they'd be paying $375 times two for that one room. So like over $700.
Right. But there's so few options.
So when you think about there's so few options, but that always really, I don't know, knowing the state of those buildings, that always made me really angry that they charged that much money. Because I remember one of the residents, Jack Gates, telling me that he never even bothered using the toilet in the region where he lived, because it was always broken. And he would actually have to go next door to the Carnegie Center to go to the bathroom. Like, just the living conditions were just awful. Then in 2017, the city finally, there was all this advocacy from Wendy Peterson and some of the tenants like Jack Gates really kind of pushing the city to do more. The city finally did do an inspection and found that, yes, the floors in the bathroom were rotten, and they were worried that if the tubs were filled up, they would crash through the floor. And at that point, they decided to shut the Balmoral down and they moved everybody to new housing. And then a year later, they did the same with the Regent. They shut it down too.
So these have been sitting empty and derelict ever since.
They've been sitting totally empty with those weird crosses on the windows. Look very creepy. And then the city started this process that they'd never started before. They tried to expropriate the buildings for blight, because they had been so neglected for so many years. And
blight? This sounds like something from the Great Depression.
Yes. Well, it kind of was. Well, the idea that like this area, these two buildings were like so neglected that the city would step in and expropriate them. And they had never done that before. So I just can't emphasize enough how groundbreaking that was. That happened in the fall of 2019. And then for this past year, we've just been wondering like what's going on. And it's kind of been winding through the courts. The Sahota is like challenging the expropriation, saying that the expropriation attempt is making it hard for them to sell the buildings, and they have all these bidders who want to pay millions of dollars for their buildings. The city saying that the buildings are worth about a dollar each because they actually have negative value because they're in such bad repair. And then the last thing we heard was that the court proceedings had been suspended as they kind of were in talks. And then I got a little tip that they had been bought, and I checked land titles, and it was true. The city of Vancouver, so we're not really clear if the city bought them from the Sahotas. What we know is that the city is now the owner of the two buildings.
So let's pause for a second. Who are the Sahotas? This is not a poor family.
Yeah, the Sahotas are... I didn't actually look this up before I came on your show. So I don't know the exact... I'd have to look up the exact familial relationship. But originally there was three people. And I think some of them are siblings, and there might be like a...
I think three of the siblings are kind of the head Sahotas right now.
But they're this family. The three of them were all very elderly. And they own not just the region and the Balmoral, but a whole bunch of other properties around Vancouver and Metro Vancouver. And they live in a mansion in Shaughnessy. And they tend to own properties that are either apartment buildings or SROs that are, you know, house the poorest people in Vancouver. And there have been lots and lots of news stories about them over the years because they do have a tendency to not fix up their buildings, to let their buildings go into like terrible disrepair. They have a tendency to hire tenants to work on the buildings, and so then the work is not done properly. You know, just a lot of basically a very, very long history of very, very bad and deep neglect of these buildings that literally house the poorest people in the region.
I wanted to go back 12 years ago. The Tai actually published a story called A City Soft on Slumlords by Sean Condon.
12 years ago!
Later, the editor of Megaphone. Yes, people would remember him. Yes. And it looked at the Sahotas and got pictures of the bathrooms rotting. And it actually kind of looked at their overall kind of operation of these buildings and truly, I think, defined what is a slumlord in many ways. These are people who own a lot of property. The buildings might be a dollar, but the property they're sitting under is worth a lot of money just because it's in downtown Vancouver.
Yeah, that's right. And they do, they own. And if you want to learn more about this too, that's a great piece. But Mike Hager and Wendy Stewick at the Globe and Mail also did a really fantastic piece where they kind of detailed, it was a couple of years ago now, but they kind of detailed like all the property the Sahotas own and various things that are happening with the property. Like they do own a lot of property in the city.
And that article, if you want to find it, that one is called Low Income Residents of Vancouver, A Different Kind of Real Estate Crisis. It's so good. I really recommend it in the Globe.
Yeah. You know, I love thinking about all of the different reporters over the years who have tried to tackle the Sahotas because it literally has been like so many different people. You know, John Colborne at The Province too did like a wonderful deep dive as well into like their assets. I mean, so many people have tried to tackle the Sahotas. The frustrating thing is that you write about this great injustice and you're like, why are these people even allowed to own property? And nothing would ever change like for years and years and years, for decades.
They actually, on the BC assessment, the Sahotas own property in Shaughnessy, their mansion, is now worth $3.7 million. It dropped actually from last year at $4.5 million. It's the only property on BC Assessment that has pixelated blockings over all the windows, probably because they have garbage piled up everywhere, as has been documented by photos before.
Yes. There's a column by Alan Garr in the Vancouver Courier where he actually goes to the Sahotas house in Shaughnessy and he tries to knock on the door to talk to them, because this is the other thing. Like, you can actually call them up. We always call them up and we try to get comment, as we're supposed to do. And they never want to comment, but it's kind of this farce we have to go through. So Alan Garr one day like went to try and like knock on the door. And yeah, he has this great description of just this yard full of garbage. I mean, it's a mansion, but it's like, something is going on there. I mean, it's just this sort of mystery of why these people act the way they do and why they have sort of done this business model, I guess you could say, over the years. Like, what is the motivation? And that it doesn't really seem to matter to them how many times they're written about in the press this way. They just kept on kind of doing the same thing.
So we don't know how much the city paid, but there's some people who are quite concerned and want the city to be transparent about if they paid and how much they paid this family of slumlords.
Yeah, and I mean, I would like to know that as well. They are saying that the details of the settlement are confidential, and so that we cannot know, even we don't know the details of whether they paid anything. Like, did they pay a dollar for each building? Did they pay a few $1 million? Like, we just don't know. I'm going to try to do the FOI process. It probably won't be successful. But you can, you know, the contrast I'm thinking of is the woman who owned the townhouse in North Vancouver, and she was listing it on Airbnb, and it, you know, it was against strata rules, and it just eventually it went through the courts, and then she got evicted from this unit that she owned, like a condo unit. And then I'm contrasting that with the Sahotas, and that the idea that possibly the city paid them a few $1 million for these properties, further enriching them. Yeah. I'm holding those two things in my mind, and I just...
How does expropriation work? Because it's, I mean, it's shocking. I mean, could you tell us a bit about how expropriation works, though? Because when it's for something, I know, like a public work or a highway, you would get a fair market value normally for your property if it was seized by a government. Is that always the case?
Well, this is the first time this has happened in BC that I know of, that a municipality has gone to try to expropriate a property, because a residential rental property, because it is so badly neglected. This has never happened. So I don't know how this usually works, because like you say, usually when expropriation happens, it's for some infrastructure project. So the city was going to court, and I have all the court documents. They had tried to start the expropriation process. The Sahotas, as we knew they would, they were fighting it in court. They had all these arguments about all these different offers they had been getting for the property before the city's expropriation attempts started, and how the expropriation was affecting that ability to sell the property. And they had various legal arguments. The city had responded. The province had responded. So they were kind of going through the court system. And then something happened. And I guess I don't know whether it was the Sahotas or the city who kind of wanted to come to the table, but one of the parties seemed to be amenable to making this settlement.
It's a big deal. And this is the first two, I believe, of this plan that the city announced, I guess, in September, October, that they would actually start buying SROs.
Yeah, I think it's a part of the same plan. So the city wants to acquire over 100 SRO buildings with the idea that, yeah, the affordability of SRO rooms has just been going, just be getting worse and worse over the years because they've been gentrified. It's just this process that's been happening at such a rapid rate, and they were really concerned about it.
Now, this isn't an empty promise. They got $1 billion. Is that right? They got $1 billion from the federal government?
They are planning to get $1 billion.
Oh. They're pursuing it, yes, is what I'm...
They're pursuing it. and we know the federal government is interested in investing. And so we know that the federal government is interested in pursuing, you know, housing. They want to have a national housing strategy. So I guess the city thinks it's a pretty sure bet to try to do this. Just on this, on the Balmoral and the region, I know there was all this chatter about how much did they pay, but just kind of putting that on pause for a moment, I do want to emphasize that it is hugely positive news that the city does now own these buildings, because now they can start the process that they've been wanting to do, which is to either renovate them or tear them down and build something new that would be social housing for the lowest income residents in the city.
When I talked to Wendy, we were laughing about the fact that probably about 10 years ago, the biggest demand from folks like Wendy and now Councillor Jean Swanson and that the Carnegie Action Group was that the city would buy 10 SRO buildings and turn them into social housing. And it was seen as a wild and unrealistic demand at the time.
How times have changed.
And now they have this plan for 105 hotels.
And yeah, I remember it's a different kind of political era right now, I think. And when we're looking at, you know, with COVID being here and showing the deep inequalities in society, I just feel like the political will seems to be there to just do this change that people have been calling for so long. And it is a little frustrating when you think, oh, well, what if we had started this 10 years ago? We could be farther along. But I guess it's great that it's happening now. And this is very concrete action. I mean, these two buildings are now... they're now owned by the city, and really, it's going to be a huge transformation.
One area where I think a lot of us feel like there hasn't been any bold action or any action at all is, of course, on Tent City. currently in Strathcona, previously in Oppenheimer. Can we talk about that a bit? Because why has nothing happened? The people have been demanding housing and services.
Yeah.
And the city has acknowledged that it's a major crisis and problem for public safety and for the resident safety. The neighborhoods have had an uprising over any possibility of relocating them to Jericho or other places. And yet we seem to be completely stagnated. What is going on?
That's a really good question. I don't really understand it. So the city, back in early October, the city city staff put together this report of all these different options of what city council could do right away to do with the tent city. And so one of them was like, you could create some managed camps, like city sanctioned camps that are managed. You could put up a disaster relief tent. We could buy or lease hotel rooms and move people into there. And we could do we could try out some tent city villages. We could try out sanctioned sites for RV camps where people could live permanently.
We had an architect on here talking about the tiny homes idea at City Hall even. There was lots of proposals during a week about 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the option that City Council chose was to buy or lease hotel rooms and or apartment buildings or SROs and to move people into those, which is great. Like, that's the best quality housing. But it also takes the longest time and we'll probably need help from the province to really do it on a large scale.
And of course you can't involuntarily move people is the other issue. So some people don't feel safe in that kind of environment.
No, that's the other issue. I mean, that's something we have to remember. There are people who have a really hard time living in shelters. There are people who have a really hard time just living with other people because they have deep, deep trauma and psychological issues. But the city chose this one option rather than like a few different ones. They chose this one option. And it takes time to buy or lease hotels. And especially when the province is still kind of in getting, after the election, they're not really there yet. Hopefully they will be soon. And so it just has taken a long time and I'm not really sure what's going on. And it's, we're deep into winter now. It's cold, it's wet. It's pretty grim. This morning, a man was found dead, unfortunately, at the tent city.
That's terrible.
So that's very sad. It's very terrible.
And that's not the first incident like that. Somebody lost his leg after getting stabbed and abandoned nearby there for a long, many hours.
There have been two young men who were very, very badly assaulted and very seriously injured. There's always this argument that people are safer there than they would be being homeless on their own. So we have to think about that too. But yeah, these incidents are just very disturbing. In the meantime, we know that the city is opening fewer shelter spots this year because of COVID. They have to reduce the capacity to make it safe. And so we have fewer shelter spots open for the winter. And we have more people homeless. So something needs to happen. Something else needs to happen with the tent city.
Do you know anything about this proposed Jericho hostel plan? Because I know that the West Point Grey residents were concerned about potentially the tent city residents being moved over to Jericho after they've already been moved from several times.
Yeah, as soon as the media reported on that letter from the West Point Grey Residents Association, they kind of disavowed that letter. They said it wasn't from them.
They said it was on their letterhead. But they did have concerns. They said the letter did not accurately state their concerns about the Jericho hostel, but they still have concerns.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the west side of Vancouver and the idea, I think, to some people of moving people who probably live in the downtown east side and then have lived in Strathcona Park and now being moved to the west side. I would kind of assume that there would be some concerns being raised from people on the west side about various things like crime and as a reporter who's covered the city for years and years, I would just kind of assume that yes, there would be some people who would raise concerns about that. But that property was chosen though, because it is like the one property, one of two properties that the city already owns and wouldn't have to acquire. And it's right now because of COVID, it's likely empty. So the idea was that it could be used right away. The other property was the 2400 Motel on Kingsway.
I guess the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, Sunday was the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women, marking the Montreal Massacre in 1989. And this week we saw a number of very significant players in anti-violence, women's anti-violence, women's shelter organizations speaking out about the rising levels of violence against women during COVID-19 in the Downtown Eastside, including the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, including Wish Dropin, who will be on our show on Wednesday, and also the Atira Women's Resource Housing. Tell us about this letter and some of the things that led to this spike in violence against women.
This is something that's so very sad and distressing to have to write about it, but back in March or April, there was that incident where a woman was in labor in a porta potty just right at Main and Hastings, and she was apparently in there for hours, and then the baby did not survive and was found there. It was just a terrible situation. In May, I wrote about a woman who had been assaulted and held in a tent in Oppenheimer Park, Tent City, for hours and hours, and was very badly assaulted. And then Daphne Bramham, a columnist at the Vancouver Sun, was sent this video recently that showed a man and a woman engaging in sexual activity right at Main and Hastings, like right in public and during the day. And Bramham was really raising questions about whether this was consensual and whether or not it was a sexual assault. It was very disturbing, whatever the case, and really showed like the lack of options.
And nobody intervened was very, very disturbing and lots of questions. We don't yet know. The police are investigating exactly what happened there, but it's the kind of thing that raises a lot of questions about what we do if we see something like that. And what the line is about, you know, protecting people versus respecting their autonomy. And in this case, lots of questions.
It's a really hard one because, it's not clear whether or not it was consensual, but it's very disturbing to think that people might have had no other option. And what situation the woman was in, it's not right. So obviously it's not right. So this led the three organizations, as you said, to put out this letter, and they're calling for a task force to be struck immediately with the city and the provincial government and the federal government to really take a look at not just like sort of band-aid solutions for this in the Downtown Eastside, but really, really deep structural issues that have already been identified in the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women's Report, in Red Woman Rising, which is a report that the Downtown Eastside Women's Center put together a few years ago. And they're calling for this task force to be struck immediately. I talked to the mayor about this, and he said that he's spoken with them, but the mayor and some of the other councillors I spoke to also kind of kicked the ball over to the province as well, saying they really wanted the province to lead this. So we'll kind of have to keep tracking that and see where it ends up.
I just really hope that there's some urgent action, because I think we've heard enough stories from enough people that all these incidents add up to a patchwork that is just an unsafe environment for women, for vulnerable people, for residents.
Yeah, it's very disturbing, and it just keeps going on in our city, and it really shouldn't have to. I mean, one bright spot, like just to kind of have one bright spot in this conversation is the news. And I know that you've already talked to Mabrat Bayan of Wish, that Wish is going to be opening another shelter for sex workers.
On Kingsway.
Which is great. Like, that's great news that there's, and that's when I think of solutions that can help with this problem, that's the kind of thing that we're looking for. And also, I think they're going to put another bathroom trailer up there as well. So there's just a place for people to go in the middle of the night when they're working up there.
And they, of course, already have that 24/7 shelter at their existing location in the Downtown Eastside too.
David, I was shocked to realize that was the first ever shelter for sex workers in Canada. Yeah. I had no idea that didn't exist before this fall. So yeah, and so that first shelter is located on Alexander Street in the Downtown Eastside.
Great. Well, thanks for ending on a bright note. I know it's a lot of tough things to talk about. I think it's time we confront these conversations. So thank you for reporting and bringing the facts and kind of leading to a solutions-based discussion about this, Jen. We always appreciate that.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. And that was Jen St. Denis. She's a reporter with the Tyee.ca, reporting on the Downtown Eastside thanks to a grant from the Local Journalism Initiative funded by Heritage Canada. That's the same funding that we get here on The Pulse on CFRO to run our Downtown Eastside Focus show. And we appreciate Jen coming on to share her stories. You can find her latest stories on the SROs as well as Tent City and Violence Against Women at thetyee.ca.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.